Major Plowman, Reel 7. You were saying that some NCOs became rather concerned about receiving new officers.
Anyway, I two sergeants I had then with different all together. Logan there and made him show the self and responsibility. It was like, rather like a father figure in the troop. I suppose it would be about 35, seemed to know everything. And I never had any, never made any difficulties with me at all. Action meetings sometimes, try and preach caution, but yeah, it was entirely different. It was a very happy partnership from then on.
But was he also a long term territorial?
No, he wasn't. He was called up quite early in the war because he was getting out, you know, he was in one of the higher age groups. And he was just, he was a very confident, but very conscientious. But he had a pleasant disposition. And he was quite straightforward and overwhelming. And of course, I met him when he died about 3 years ago, and I met him up and on almost up to the end.
When you took over that second troop, how long did it take you to get on to terms with the troop as a whole?
No time at all. I mean, I had never, when I had took over HQ troop in the Sea Squad, first joined the company. Very good, like all of them. There was no problem at all. And of course, I was able to move when I was moved to Iceland and give the truth. And I began to feel my way. I was blocked all the time. And it's very difficult. I was very much on this troop trying to keep his men on the ball and there when they wanted and in order and every way. And but at the same time, he expects to give a lead to the troop and not to be terrible. Maybe I didn't really do that, or we didn't have to do that in Tunisia. Instructions and reservations like that made it quite difficult. Really. Anyway, there it was. So, from then on, I had a difficult winter with the troop sergeant.
What are the desirable qualities in a good troop sergeant? What do you look for when you're choosing a man to fulfil that role, if you've got a choice?
Well, in a way, I would give the truth of what is the remote. In some cases, I would tell him what was needed to be done, and he would go on and tell him the various jobs to the various men, and to the legs, the guards, and night guards, and that sort of thing. And changes of crew, he would make recommendations. He was closer to the men. The sergeants are closer to them. is responsible for their discipline generally, no one for them being efficient up to their job, and or any weak links he had to kill. Get the others to cover up, you know. Make a team of them.
Did you tend to keep the same men in the same vehicles? Were there men who are happier in a Huddy than a Sherman and vice versa?
Yes, okay. Yes, that's from the beginning. You feel the driver close and the violence of the way it goes, and the best gunners. So the Sherman, you have the bigger men in the Sherman. The NCOs are not responsible for their own crews, and which they kept the man along with the ship, or if he wasn't fitting in. Well, oh my God, there were three happy crews. There were two corporals and sergeants. The sergeant each had a happy crew, happy band together.
So you didn't suffer from turbulence within the crews? You didn't suffer from turbulence within the crews?
Well, I had one chap in my own crew there. I was 3 or 4 days in action. What we could have brought happened. And I went to lunch this morning to send me a replacement.
How did this chap show that he was bomb happy? What were his symptoms?
One of my hunters threw a track, and we weren't being engaged, but there was one of the guys out to the fire. You couldn't be reliable to the show at the time, this is a casino. And I said to I called to the cab driver to get out and put the tow rope on this honey. Put our tow rope. And they didn't get out. So I got out, I opened his hatch, and burst the fork in line. We did it between us. But he was not a fish leg. And then he got back and fired his tank. And that was that. But a few days later, we went out of the line and I said, he's swallowing him. He's not up to it. We want to replace
him. What happened to him? Do you know?
He was alive and kicking. Interested in the war or anything. So he was a bit of a war artist. It's quite embarrassing to me. Not really referred to him. It's sad, though. Some chaps, they're so full of apprehension, it takes another one.
What happened to him immediately? Was he sent back?
He became a truck driver or something like that. Yes. Well, he probably became a clerk because he was reasonably educated. There are plenty of jobs that have been done. I mean, there's more people at the back than the Shah.
Was he the only one of your troop who showed?
There's no doubt about it that the men in tanks were on the wrong nervous pressure than a commander, because he was occupied with reading the map of the observation, reading the wireless. Whereas they were sort of coming down in this southeast and wondering, you know, what would happen next. Really, this they heard over the wireless. So was in trouble, might be us next. Which, I mean, I never had time to think about it. Go to dusk with a committee. And if we weren't for this, you know, we were reserved, we were following. All the reports coming in over the air and everything. So, I think I had a good deal of weight, especially when I went to Bombington and saw the first war of tanks and thought it was all in there. Must have been awful, wouldn't it?
When did you eventually leave Algeria and go?
In the March, mid-March.
Well, this would be March of
1944.
Yes. Had you been brought up to a high level of training by the time you went across?
Yeah. Mm. The end of the had a very high reputation at the end of the meeting. And morale was extremely good. They were involved.
What was the discipline like in the yeomanry? You know, when you joined them, was it the same as it had been in the regiments back in England, or was it different in any way?
A bit more relaxed. Quote unquote peacetime conditions of a barracks or whatever. The officers had a mess, the sergeants had a mess. And then they had the feeling canteen arrangements. But the sergeant or corporal with his tank crew bedding down with them every night. Commenting on the porridge or whatever. It was meant to make, lucky enough to be able to make porridge and so on. They were really close. A bit more difficult to sharpen them up on the plane. But then the rest of all this, they wouldn't be let down. They wouldn't be let down. But same time, I mean, they're all saluting and discipline and saluting masters, they're always up to scratch.
While you were doing this training, had you been keeping in touch with what was going on in the Mediterranean theatre? Were you aware of the fighting in Sicily and beyond?
Yes, we used to get intelligence reports from the mission. And we was the first guard of the day in the original troop. So if we didn't get them, then we did get them. They were written by Nigel Lucas and Paul Fairfax. And he always gave you the broader picture. Yes, we will get to it. And that was part of the administration. He was all well informed of what was going on. And I think we had lectures by officers from other regiments, who said, being informed about sharing our own.
Do you remember how much warning you had that you were going to leave North Africa and go to Italy?
Well, I think we were aware that we would be required to restrain. There wasn't room in Italy to, in the winter, too much armor. We could find the weather. I suppose that's why we were usually. And we were, when it came to the final budget procedure, we were to be the used after the break.
You were going to be part of the corps de chasse?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. You're saying you had a rough crossing from Bone. What sort of vessels did you cross in?
Some sort of inverted line. It was a line. I think it was, well, I don't know, I was very good at sharing it. But we had a saloon. The officers had this dining area with a grand piano in the corner. And first night, one of the best girls was in charge of everything was very dignified. And the following day, apparently he and his grand piano were in, were shooting around all over the place, and no one else was to be seen in there. So it was a pretty rough crossing.
Were your vehicles on the same liner, or were they on a different?
Because when we landed at Naples, we marched. We marched to a fragola, a transit camp, which is about 10 miles north of Naples. And seeing Naples die was a great disappointment. We were all down there, and there was this always painted chest. The first guys were all very faded and grumbling and so on. It was slightly disappointing. No doubt if it had been sorry, it would have looked good. Anyway, we had this march and we got to this target camp. And that was a great shock for those guys. I think it was on the march because we saw a desperate state of the people. The Germans just stripped in. They ran all the cattle away. They left them digging the mangroves in the surrounding villages and towns, starving. In a terrible state. I hadn't seen. I mean, when you went going to the native quarter and places like Tunis now, then you actually see some starving people. And these tents were all in this front and all lined with very little space between the rows. And the offices, the trios, were in one tent. And they didn't get enough food in the mess tents, which was unusual. And we had out of these mess tents standing up. And as we went to throw the scraps away,
What did she want? Did she want food or did she want money? She wanted...
I think she wanted money to buy food, yes. But there were other people who went to be scratched. I was whisked away to be taken in mind of our advance party to set up camp at Pina Monte de Leaf. And we noted up there.
Who
was not good. We half of the tentage of where the headquarters 8th Army had been destroyed. Anyway, we set up camp. And,
how many of you were there in the advance party?
Well, there's the second command was growing much, so I think we had the officers in the bin.
Was this a squadron advance party or a regimental one? Yeah. Squadron.
He's good. We were thinking that there were things to be done, like pits to be done, for the refuge in the cookhouse. And he had one of these sprays that he was using a different men all stood around watching him because he worked so hard and so fast, he nearly disappeared under the ground. They'd had quite a lot of good jobs in England, but they'd never seen anybody work like that before. anyway, squadron. The rest arrived and then we began more troop training.
But where did you actually met up with your vehicles? At the transit camp just north of Naples?
We came up. I suppose the drivers, the department of the drivers who were sent to
drive. How did you get up then northwards as part of the advance party? Did you?
We went by truck.
You had trucks, yeah. Were they your own, or had they been supplied by the service corps?
I can't remember, but I think they were. I think they were from Lincolnshire.
What was the ground like in this area where you set up your forward camp?
It must be a fairly low ground. It's rather a bad impression, but I think there's a Saturday night, it's all in the afternoon, and I set my command as little as I had a tent. And he was reading a novel about one of the first night, a really quiet like that. And he said, "This I'll be reading from your book. Of all the winds that blow, the fern and the Switzerland, and the Stroud and the Lone Fern, the Home Sea in Egypt, none is more pernicious than the Libetia, what is it, southwest of India. It was deadly on March, and we were just experiencing it. And I thought we were going to protect the end of our land. And the sickness about he slept on. And I was going to the surgery to come and help me, but I was helping the program. Anyway, they always said more than we began normal 12 hours in camp, and we'd get a troop training.
It occurs to me that at this stage the soldiers might have been getting a bit impatient because they'd been training for some months without being in action. Did that cause any difficulties with morale or motivation?
We got to move to Bone, the voyage, the march, and then travelling up, seeing new country and everything, and then getting into this camp. After the winter got settled in this camp, which was the first bit of comfort they'd had since they left Bone. And the weather began to pick up.
What sort of training were you doing then? Were you doing individual still, or were you doing tactical training?
The drivers possibly hadn't been near the left vehicle since North Africa. There's quite a lot to see to. The guns need to be stripped down and cleaned out and prepared. And just getting used to the country a bit in the mountains. The people were all gathered around, and they were all talking together, and very happy, but friendly and so on, and they ignored it. And then someone in his voice said, "Say, can I help you?" And this little southern Italian returned just before the war from Chicago. That was a surprise. And then also they came across the other South African prison of war and escaped. And we looked after by these communities.
What did you do with them?
Expected them to get back to their formations.
And had you been told what to do if you... Yes. I mean, had you been warned that you might meet escaped prisoners of war? Did you find it difficult to get used to driving tanks in mountain country?
Yes, the drive was distasteful. We had two very good showmen. No, we had four very good drivers. I had no problem at all. And we had to beat it. I'm much more scared of my father going over the edge. He's being shot by the German, by the enemy tank gun. But they were very skilled. Actually, you see, this was the thing about the Derbyshire Yeomanry. They had quite an element of people from those riots. Technically mine, the core of the ridge. And the first commanding officer made representations to the